You're tuned to 90.7 KRWG Las Cruces. I'm Leora Zeitlin. Tonight, KRWG has a concert, our annual holiday concert, and it's a totally new group of people coming in with Jim Shearer, who's been our mainstay all these years. And I am delighted to welcome into our studios Mike Sizer and Dave Jellema, both from different parts of Texas, who are coming together with Jim Shearer and some other musicians tonight in what Jim calls the Second Line Survivors Band. I guess it changes from concert to concert. So welcome, Mike Sizer and Dave Jellema.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Let's start with Mike Sizer, who's a clarinetist with the New Orleans Gumbo Kings. I know I didn't pronounce it like I come from New Orleans, because I don't. But you started, I know that you played on a riverboat, you played with the Dukes of Dixieland.
And, that's right.
And you've been playing clarinet for a very long time.
Very long time.
Yeah.
52 years.
That you've been playing.
Yeah. So I'm getting kind of good at it.
It takes a
but
while.
I still have to keep playing. You know, if you don't play, it goes, it leaves.
What drew you to the Dixieland particular style?
Early on, my sister and my parents exposed me to a whole lot of music. And when I took up the clarinet, first chair and band and all that, so they got me Pete Fountain records. And a couple of them were live recordings of New Orleans stuff. And I don't know, it must have hit something, because I knew at age 14 that's all I ever wanted to do, especially when I found out they would actually pay you to play an instrument. I was like, really? Okay, that's me. And so I was very fortunate to have that locked in that early. That's all I ever wanted to do.
And that's all you've done. And you also sing.
I do sing a little bit, yeah.
Did you sing right from the beginning?
No. Necessity and, you know, entertainment is entertainment.
Novelty.
And that's sometimes a long way away from music. But I got a good enough ear, and my voice isn't totally offensive, so it's working out okay.
Yeah, wow. All right, let's bring Dave Jellema into this conversation. We'll just all talk, but not all at once. Dave Jellema, cornet player,
yes,
and now living in Austin, and did you also know from a really young age that this was what you wanted to do?
About 10. Yes.
10. Oh.
I didn't pursue it full time, but I did hear a Bix Beiderbecke record when I was about 9 years old, and then by the time I was 10 or so, I had started playing cornet. It took a little while for my little brain to connect the two, but I heard a live jazz band, in about 1975, and made my debut 40 years ago this past March as a 13-year-old at a Shakey's Pizza Parlor playing jazz, traditional jazz.
And you've been playing ever since.
Yes, off and on. You know, there are times during college and grad school that I wasn't playing hard, and time that I was overseas, but I didn't play. But I would play during breaks and come back to it. It wasn't a full-time thing for me until later, but I've always kept up with it, and I've always either was playing in bands or, you know, practicing along with records and things. So, yeah, I knew fairly early as well that it grabbed me. it sort of chooses you. It's not
that's
something
good. That's well put.
You know,
that's true.
It really does. You suddenly wake up one day and you're like, I've got to do this.
Huh. Mm-hmm. So I'm a lot more familiar with the classical music world, where you get to have a lot of fun on stage, but there's a ton of work involved, and there's a ton of work involved with jazz, but particularly with Dixieland, it's so joyful. It sounds like it's just fun all the time. When you just started to practice, or when you start to practice now, do you have to go through, you know, the scales and before you get to the fun stuff?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm playing on what they call changes. You know, I just know a tune, a series of chord progressions that build a tune. That's what I practice on, and then I find something that I can't play.
Huh.
An idea I have that I can't execute, and I stay there until I execute it.
In your own mind, you just come up with something, or you find some music?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, is there anything original? I don't know, but That's what I work on when I practice, is stuff that I can't do. And maybe someday I'll do it. That's kind of been the thing all along.
Yeah. So, how about you, Dave?
I never practice. No, I do. And it's, you know, warm up exercises and then fingering exercises just to maintain that kind of agility. I haven't been very good about like tonguing exercises and articulation, but I get enough of that playing. But I, you know, playing enough that it keeps me fresh. But I do like practicing when I'm in that mood. I'm getting ready for a trip to Korea on Monday, and so I'm also trying to learn some new tunes and playing along with the CD, and that's one of my main ways of practicing, is playing along with music that I have and getting ready for something.
So you guys live not that far apart from each other in Texas, but you never met until a few years
ago. 3 hours.
Yeah.
Well, in the scheme of the globe.
Right.
Not so far.
We've met here, what, 3 times now?
Yeah.
All right. New Mexico. We've had to travel much further to play together.
I'm going
to
bring Jim Shearer into this. He's sitting in the shadows.
I'll tell you all the stories.
Yeah, just give us how this whole thing came to be.
Well, it really all, this particular band started with me and the drummer Ricky Malachi, and we got stuck on a float in Ruidoso, New Mexico, and all the other musicians were supposed to come join us, but they didn't for about 2 miles down the parade route, and it was just me and Ricky. So we just started playing old New Orleans second line grooves, just tuba and drums, and we had a lot of fun doing it. So we said, you know what, we're going to start a band that really focuses on these old New Orleans second line grooves. And so we started the Second Line Survivors, and we always make the joke, the band is whoever shows up for whatever particular gig. And so we've done different versions with Kurt Warren and Eric Unsworth and Alan Kaplan and other local musicians here, but when we get the chance, we really like to make a true, full, traditional jazz band. Clarinet, cornet, trombone. Tonight we have Howard Elkins, which is great. We've got a guitar banjo player, Mike Francis on the piano, and then me and Ricky. And so it's a full band, and you were talking earlier about you know, how this music comes together. The beauty of this music is what's called collective improvisation. The clarinet has a job to do. The cornet, the trombone, they follow the old models of the marching bands, but it's all improvised. We all agree on a tune and a key, and off we go. And we do collective improvisation where you have to listen to one another, play together, but not sort of musically step on one another's toes. And then, of course, we are more modern, so we do open it up, and everybody gets a chance to play a solo improvisation, too. But it's a mix like no other style of jazz.
Describe what second line means.
Well, second line really, they say, started with a man named Buddy Bolden. And the whole concept, forgive me for quoting Ken Burns and the jazz, but Wynton Marsalis talked about it. He said it was like boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick, a straight four-beat marching band. And then Buddy Bolden and his people decided they were going to do what's called the Big Four. And they went boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, ga-gong, gong, chick, gong, chick, gong, ga-gong, gong, chick, gong, chick. And it became this groove that we now call a street beat groove. And it's tied to New Orleans music.
The name Second Line is from the parades where the band was up front, and then the umbrella people were right behind all the partiers. And
so they're called the second line. Those dancers are the second line dancers.
I'm not sure whether the band was in the second tier or somebody else was in the second tier, but that's where the name comes from, is the parades.
And when you're improvising and you're going from, you said, Jim, each person has a role. Mm-hmm. And how do you know who's the next one who's going to jump in and do their solo or their role?
We tend to follow a pattern that kind of goes down through the band. So a lot of times it'll be, you know, when it's time for solos, it'll be the clarinet, then the trumpet, then the trombone. Or sometimes we plan it ahead of time. Like tonight we'll do some special arrangements. And the whole tune isn't arranged, but we've made decisions about who plays when, and we structure it that way.
And typically the cornet is playing the melody of each of these songs. It's not, I'm just not collectively improvising, you know. Somebody has to state a melody on the outset, and then we often do that at the end of the song as well.
Return to the melody.
To return to it, yes.
And what about when you add the vocals in?
We usually get out of the way for the vocals. You know, you want to leave space for the vocals so you can actually understand the words. But I mean, if you really think about it, like Dave said, the horn, the trumpet cornet, is in the middle. That's playing the melody. The clarinet's above. They do something called noodling, right? And that really comes from the Sousa band. Think about the piccolo solo from Stars and Stripes Forever. That's noodling. Trombone's down underneath that, and they tend to play chord notes and things that complement the melody. We call it a counter melody. And then the banjo, the piano, they're filling in the harmonies. The tuba's playing the bass line. The drums are keeping time. Everybody's got their job to do.
The musical term for the clarinet is obble gobble. I'm sorry, obligato.
I like obble gobble better, especially right after Thanksgiving. So, what's your favorite thing about doing, making music your life? I mean, it's making music, but is there a moment on stage when something happens that it's like, this is what it's all for?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everybody's nodding their head. Yes, that's great for radio. But we all feel that way.
And also, we also get occasional feedback from the audience where people say that was so moving to me that you know affected me in some way. I'll never forget someone who had a transplant and was able to hear for the first time, and she was at the landing listening us play, and this is the first time she could hear, and she was just like, this is so amazing to me to hear live music for the first time, you know? And moments like that, it transcends everyday life.
Which is what music is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in a band like this, the most fun is being the weakest player in the band because everybody's so amazing, and you listen to what they do, and it's like, oh, I want to go with that. Oh, I want to go with that. And you're listening to one another, and it's just this instant communication and feedback. And everybody just sort of rises to that occasion.
Mike, come a little bit closer to the mic again. You performed on Riverboat for a number of years. Then you were a studio musician, I think I read, in San Francisco.
Yes. I mean, it was a 40-hour week in the studio, but sure, I got calls to come in and record for, you know, national commercials and local commercials and industrial videos, as they call them. That was back in the day when they had studios. These days, people are doing it, you know, with Pro Tools and stuff like that, just in their living room. Mm-hmm. I could probably record something and send somebody a file, and it'd be done. I'm just don't get those kind of calls very often anymore.
Did you enjoy that? Was it different than performing live?
It's very challenging, and it's to hear yourself played back right then. It's really rude. It's really rude, and so you leave a better player. Uh-huh. I had one instance. It was a corporate video, and we the producer, the engineer, all one and the same, a friend of mine, and then the client was there at the mixing board, and play this, and so I played, and it just kept searching for something they wanted. I was playing the saxophone, and finally the client says, Can you play something that sounds more gray?
Gray as in gray hair or gray as in a gray day?
And of course I said, oh, yeah, you bet. And I played something else. And then I played something else. And finally they liked something. But that's kind of, you get in that kind of work sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gray.
We can do a public media deep cut too. What was the cooking show you played for?
Great Chefs.
Yeah, Great Chefs, the first iteration of Great Chefs. And I remember, you know, flipping by public television all the time. It's like, that's a great clarinet player. Oh, it's Mike! And that ran for years, though.
Long time.
Yeah.
That show started with a hidden camera. It was just a one-in, one-out show by WYES down in New Orleans. Hidden camera of people and hidden camera microphone, people looking at the Brennan's breakfast menu outside the Brennan's door, and they were famous for their $100 omelets. This is in the late 70s, early 80s.
Wow.
Stuff like that, you know. And so people would just their remarks about the menu, and then the concept of bringing a camera in a kitchen, that was way out. No one did that, and Great Chefs did that. Julia Child, I guess, was probably maybe first, but Great Chefs was right there with her.
And that was out of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Paul Perdomo was on that. Uh-huh. That was early Emeril, you know,
right.
Several of those Great chefs. Where that was the first show they were on,
and they
did the whole soundtrack for.
I was just going to say, and they had a soundtrack. That just speaks to one of the ways that, the many ways that music is in our lives that we don't even we're not always even aware, right? Yeah. Music comes in on something that you're watching, and you don't even necessarily consciously absorb the fact that there's a musician sitting somewhere or was playing that music. Well, tonight's the concert. Everybody can see you sitting right up there on stage. It's going to be at the Rio Grande Theater. Mike Sizer, Dave Jellema, Jim Shearer, Howard Elkins,
Ricky Malachi, Mike Francis on piano, and Frank Otero.
In a special holiday concert for KRWG, and we hope we'll see you out at the concert. And thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks,
it's a pleasure. Thank you.